The Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena, Part 15, A Treatise of Prayer. Of the means which the soul takes to arrive at pure and generous love. And here begins the Treatise of Prayer. When the soul has passed through the doctrine of Christ crucified, with true love of virtue and hatred of vice, and has arrived at the house of self-knowledge and entered therein, she remains, with her door barred, in watching and constant prayer, separated entirely from the consolations of the world. Why does she thus shut herself in? She does so from fear, knowing her own imperfections, and also from the desire which she has of arriving at pure and generous love. And because she sees and knows well that in no other way can she arrive thereat, she waits, with a lively faith, for my arrival, through increase of grace in her. How is a lively faith to be recognized? By perseverance in virtue, and by the fact that the soul never turns back for anything, whatever it be, nor rises from holy prayer for any reason, except, note well, for obedience or charity's sake. For no other reason ought she to leave off prayer, for during the time ordained for prayer, the devil is wont to arrive in the soul, causing much more conflict and trouble than when the soul is not occupied in prayer. This he does in order that holy prayer may become tedious to the soul, tempting her often with these words, "This prayer avails you nothing, for you need attend to nothing except your vocal prayers." He acts thus in order that, becoming wearied and confused in mind, she may abandon the exercise of prayer, which is a weapon with which the soul can defend herself from every adversary, if grasped with the hand of love, by the arm of free choice, in the light of the holy faith. Here, touching something concerning the sacrament of the body of Christ, the complete doctrine is given, and how the soul proceeds from vocal to mental prayer, and a vision is related which this devout soul once received. Know, dearest daughter, how by humble, continual, and faithful prayer the soul acquires, with time and perseverance, every virtue. Wherefore should she persevere and never abandon prayer, either through the illusion of the devil or her own fragility, that is to say, either on account of any thought or movement coming from her own body, or of the words of any creature. The devil often places himself upon the tongues of creatures, causing them to chatter nonsensically, with the purpose of preventing the prayer of the soul. All of this she should pass by means of the virtue of perseverance. Oh, how sweet and pleasant to that soul, and to me, is holy prayer made in the house of knowledge of self and of me, opening the eye of the intellect to the light of faith, and the affections to the abundance of my charity, which was made visible to you through my visible only begotten Son, who showed it to you with his blood, which blood inebriates the soul and clothes her with the fire of divine charity, giving her the food of the sacrament, which is placed in the tavern of the mystical body of the Holy Church, that is to say, the food of the body and blood of my Son, holy God and holy man, administered to you by the hand of my vicar, who holds the key of the blood. This is that tavern which I mentioned to you, standing on the bridge, to provide food and comfort for the travelers and the pilgrims who pass by the way of the doctrine of my truth, lest they should faint through weakness. This food strengthens little or much, according to the desire of the recipient, whether he receives sacramentally or virtually. He receives sacramentally when he actually communicates with the Blessed Sacrament. He receives virtually when he communicates, both by desire of communion and by contemplation of the blood of Christ crucified, communicating, as it were, sacramentally, with the affection of love, which is to be tasted in the blood, which, as the soul sees, was shed through love. On seeing this, the soul becomes inebriated and blazes with holy desire and satisfies herself, becoming full of love for me and for her neighbor. Where can this be acquired? In the house of self-knowledge with holy prayer, where imperfections are lost, even as Peter and the disciples, while they remained in watching and prayer, lost their imperfection and acquired perfection. By what means is this acquired? By perseverance seasoned with the most holy faith. But do not think that the soul receives such ardor and nourishment from prayer if she pray only vocally, as do many souls whose prayers are rather words than love. Such as these give heed to nothing except to completing psalms and saying many paternosters. And when they have once completed their appointed tale, they do not appear to think of anything further, but seem to place devout attention and love in merely vocal recitation, which the soul is not required to do. For in doing only this, she bears but little fruit, which pleases me but little. But if you ask me whether the soul should abandon vocal prayer, since it does not seem at all that they are called to mental prayer, I should reply, no. The soul should advance by degrees. And I know well that just as the soul is at first imperfect and afterwards perfect, so also is it with her prayer. She should nevertheless continue in vocal prayer while she is yet imperfect, so as not to fall into idleness. But she should not say her vocal prayers without joining them to mental prayer. That is to say, that while she is reciting, she should endeavor to elevate her mind in my love, with the consideration of her own defects, and of the blood of my only begotten Son, wherein she finds the breath of my charity and the remission of her sins. And this she should do, so that self-knowledge and the consideration of her own defects should make her recognize my goodness in herself and continue her exercises with true humility. I do not wish defects to be considered in particular, but in general, so that the mind may not be contaminated by the remembrance of particular and hideous sins. But as I said, I do not wish the soul to consider her sins, either in general or in particular, without also remembering the blood and the broadness of my mercy, for fear that otherwise she should be brought to confusion. And together with confusion would come the devil, who has caused it, under color of contrition and displeasure of sin. And so she would arrive at eternal damnation, not only on account of her confusion, but also through the despair which would come to her, because she did not seize the arm of my mercy. This is one of the subtle devices with which the devil deludes my servants. And in order to escape from his deceit and to be pleasing to me, you must enlarge your hearts and affections in my boundless mercy with true humility. You know that the pride of the devil cannot resist the humble mind, nor can any confusion of spirit be greater than the broadness of my good mercy, if the soul will only truly hope therein. Wherefore it was, if you remember rightly, that once, when the devil wished to overthrow you by confusion, wishing to prove to you that your life had been deluded, and that you had not followed my will, you did that which was your duty, which my goodness, which is never withheld from him who will receive it, gave you strength to do. That is, you rose, humbly trusting in my mercy, and said, I confess to my Creator that my life has indeed been passed in darkness, but I will hide myself in the wounds of Christ crucified, and bathe myself in his blood, and so shall my iniquities be consumed, and with desire will I rejoice in my Creator. You remember that then the devil fled. And turning round to the opposite side, he endeavored to inflate you with pride, saying, You are perfect and pleasing to God, and there is no more need for you to afflict yourself or to lament your sins. And once more I gave you the light to see your true path, namely, humiliation of yourself. And you answered the devil with these words, 'Wretch that I am, John the Baptist never sinned and was sanctified in his mother's womb, and I have committed so many sins and have hardly begun to know them with grief and true contrition, seeing who God is, who is offended by me, and who I am, who offend him.' Then the devil, not being able to resist your humble hope in my goodness, said to you, 'Cursed that you are, for I can find no way to take you. If I put you down through confusion, you rise to heaven on the wings of mercy. And if I raise you on high, you humble yourself down to hell. And when I go into hell, you persecute me, so that I will return to you no more, because you strike me with the stick of charity.' The soul, therefore, should season the knowledge of herself with the knowledge of my goodness, and then vocal prayer will be of use to the soul who makes it, and pleasing to me, and she will arrive, from vocal imperfect prayer, exercised with perseverance, at perfect mental prayer. But if she simply aims at completing her tale, and for vocal abandons mental prayer, she will never arrive at it. Sometimes the soul will be so ignorant that, having resolved to say so many prayers vocally, and I, visiting her mind sometimes in one way and sometimes in another, in a flash of self-knowledge or of contrition for sin, sometimes in the broadness of my charity, and sometimes by placing before her mind in diverse ways, according to my pleasure and the desire of the soul, the presence of my truth. She, the soul, in order to complete her tale, will abandon my visitation, that she feels, as it were, by conscience, rather than abandon that which she had begun. She should not do so, for in so doing she yields to a deception of the devil. The moment she feels her mind disposed by my visitation in the many ways I have told you, she should abandon vocal prayer. Then, my visitation passed, if there be time, she can resume the vocal prayers which she had resolved to say. But if she has not time to complete them, she ought not on that account to be troubled or suffer annoyance and confusion of mind, of course, provided that it were not the divine office which clerics and religious are bound and obliged to say under penalty of offending me, for they must, until death, say their office. But if they, at the hour appointed for saying it, should feel their minds drawn and raised by desire, they should so arrange as to say it before or after my visitation, so that the debt of rendering the office be not omitted. But in any other case, vocal prayer should be immediately abandoned for the said cause. Vocal prayer, made in the way that I have told you, will enable the soul to arrive at perfection, and therefore she should not abandon it, but use it in the way that I have told you. And so, with exercise and perseverance, she will taste prayer in truth, and the food of the blood of my only begotten Son. And therefore I told you that some communicated virtually with the body and blood of Christ, although not sacramentally. That is, they communicate in the affection of charity, which they taste by means of holy prayer, little or much, according to the affection with which they pray. They who proceed with little prudence and without method taste little, and they who proceed with much taste much. For the more the soul tries to loosen her affection from herself and fasten it in me with the light of the intellect, the more she knows. And the more she knows, the more she loves. And loving much, she tastes much. You see, then, that perfect prayer is not attained to through many words, but through affection of desire, the soul raising herself to me, with knowledge of herself and of my mercy, seasoned the one with the other. Thus she will exercise together mental and vocal prayer. For even as the active and contemplative life is one, so are they. Although vocal or mental prayer can be understood in many and diverse ways, for I have told you that a holy desire is a continual prayer, in this sense, that a good and holy will disposes itself with desire to the occasion actually appointed for prayer, in addition to the continual prayer of holy desire. Wherefore, vocal prayer will be made at the appointed time by the soul who remains firm in a habitual holy will, and will sometimes be continued beyond the appointed time, according as charity commands, for the salvation of the neighbor, if the soul see him to be in need, and also her own necessities, according to the state in which I have placed her. Each one, according to his condition, ought to exert himself for the salvation of souls, for this exercise lies at the root of a holy will. And whatever he may contribute, by words or deeds, toward the salvation of his neighbor, is virtually a prayer, although it does not replace a prayer which one should make oneself at the appointed season. As my glorious standard-bearer Paul said, in the words, "He who ceases not to work, ceases not to pray." It was for this reason that I told you that prayer was made in many ways, that is, that actual prayer may be united with mental prayer if made with the affection of charity, which charity is itself continual prayer. I have now told you how mental prayer is reached by exercise and perseverance, and by leaving vocal prayer for mental when I visit the soul. I have also spoken to you of common prayer, that is, of vocal prayer in general, made outside of ordained times, and of the prayers of goodwill, and how every exercise, whether performed in oneself or in one's neighbor, with goodwill, is prayer. The enclosed soul should therefore spur herself on with prayer, and when she has arrived at friendly and filial love, she does so. Unless the soul keep to this path, she will always remain tepid and imperfect, and will only love me and her neighbor in proportion to the pleasure which she finds in my service. Reader's note. In Catherine's time, respect for the sacrament of Holy Communion was so great that frequent communication was discouraged, except by priests actually celebrating Mass. Non-priests were lucky to receive communion once a year at Easter. The spiritual communion referred to is the act of fervently wishing to receive communion when one is otherwise unable. This is still a good practice today in situations such as when one is sick at home or too far from a Catholic church to go to Mass on Sunday.